this month, a little baby elephant calf rewrote the textbooks here in Australia. Mr. Shuffles, the miracle Asian elephant calf, was born alive at Taronga Zoo 2 days after he was declared dead in the womb, and he's still thriving. Said to be the first elephant in captivity known to survive the type of protracted and difficult labour his mother endured. All the vets caring for the baby calf may have welcomed the presence of our last guest today, Lawrence Anthony. He lives in Zululand on South Africa's eastern seaboard, and he's the co-author of a recently released book, The Elephant Whisperer, My Life and the Herd in the African Wild. The elephants, says Mr. Lawrence, taught him about love, loyalty and freedom, and he's ready to defend the view held by many about elephants, that they are exceptional animals. Certainly the Taronga Zoo calf has renewed a fascination with them here in Australia, I think. Lawrence Anthony lives a big life. He's an ardent conservationist, and he's about to become a proxy film star, as you'll hear. He's joining me from his reserve in Tula Tula. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Lawrence, I must read this paragraph from your book to our listeners. It was 4:45 a.m. and I was standing in front of Nana, an enraged wild elephant, pleading with her in desperation. Both our lives depended on it. The only thing separating us was an 8,000-volt electric fence that she was preparing to flatten and make her escape. Nana, the matriarch of her herd, tensed her enormous frame and flared her ears. Suddenly the absurdity of the situation struck me. Here I was in pitch darkness talking to a wild female elephant with a baby, the most dangerous possible combination. Now, Lawrence, whatever happened next?
Well, if she broke out, she would have been shot. That was the problem I was facing, was she'd done it before. And there are rural Zulu populations in the area, so it's very dangerous for the locals. And Parks Board had issued rifles to all their staff in the area, so she had to stay where she was. She just couldn't come out, and she didn't. She actually stopped, and I was just, you know, talking English to her, which of course she didn't understand, but just trying to convey something in intonation and emotion. And she backed down. She actually backed down and walked back into the enclosure.
Well, of course, you imply she does sort of understand English in your book.
Well, that's one of the most amazing things, is that, it's really, the book title is about the elephants communicating with me rather than me communicating with the elephants. I just couldn't be so presumptuous. But they have an amazing ability to understand the circumstances they're in, what's going on, and why. It's quite phenomenal, actually.
Well, maybe we should just back up a little bit and provide listeners with some context. So tell us about the reserve you run and why Nana was there in the first place.
Certainly. Tula Tula is a game reserve in Zululand, South Africa. We didn't have elephant. I was offered a herd of what was described as troubled elephant at the time. And there were babies in the herd, and the Elephant Managers and Owners Association asked me if I would take them, and I did. Rather naively, I should really have checked out what troubled meant, because and they arrived, and they were severely traumatized and unhappy elephant. They didn't even last a day in the boma. They got in at 2 o'clock in the morning. By 6 o'clock in the morning, they were gone. And what they did was they pushed a tree onto the electric fence. The two females came together. It needed the two of them to do this. Pushed a tree on. And I must just tell you the next part, because it just opens up the whole subject. Left with the babies and herd following them, got to the boundary fence, which is also electrified. This is a 2.4-meter high, high, strong, electrified fence. Milled around for a while, and we know this because we followed them, and then came back into the game reserve and found the Energizer, a tiny little nondescript machine standing on its own in the middle of the bush a kilometer away, flattened it, took the power out the fence, went back, squashed the fence, and left.
Look, I read that, and I thought, is he telling us the truth?
Exactly what happened. It's uncanny and amazing, and that was my first insight into how extraordinary these animals are.
So How on earth could she have worked that out?
Well, we just don't know. We just don't know because this little machine is tiny. I mean, it's like a little suitcase standing on a pole in the middle of the bush, and she found it. Now, they have extraordinary hearing, and what it, the fence...
Oh, I see.
The fence line pulses. It makes a tiny little click in the fence as it pulses, and a similar click is coming from the box. She heard it from a kilometer away, I think, must have. Can't think
and
of
followed it.
And followed the sound.
Wow.
Absolutely amazing.
So, you... Well, quite clearly, you're bewitched by these animals. And you say in your book, you know, the elephants start communicating with you. Try to help us understand, is that an exceptional quality you bring to them? Or could I learn that? Or what?
You know, Geraldine, in the book, I really try and demystify this thing. Anybody can do this. I've got to tell you, anybody can do this. The elephant psychic and the people mystify this thing, and you have to have special psychic qualities to communicate with animals. I believe it's nonsense. I think anybody can do it. I mean, you have to have a herd of elephant, of course, but if you can get past that,
as one doesn't.
But it's certainly something don't do at home, but there's no question that humans and elephants can interrelate in ways we never knew before.
Well, you say, and it makes a lot of sense to me because I think that dogs do this too, you know, that they are very interested in humans because they're intelligent enough to gauge that their predicament is brought about by humans, you know, that they must look at human patterns in order to have some control over their own life. And you're saying that's the way we can sort of do the same back.
Exactly. I think you're exactly the same. You've got a dog and you're used to how your dog operates and deals and interrelates with you. Well, you can extrapolate that to elephant. You can. It's a bit different, but one can learn it quickly. And it'll astound you. It's absolutely astounding.
Look, could we use the example of the excitement that this birth of this little calf has stirred up in Australia, the Taronga calf, as I'm calling it, Mr. Shuffles.
Yes.
And I think for many of us, what has been really interesting is to learn about the predicament that the elephants face around birthing, that I think they said well over half of first births die. And it just said something to me. I thought, well, that's not a very successful animal in evolutionary terms if that's the case. Can you give us, is that an Asian elephant more than an African elephant? Can you throw any more light on it than this?
Absolutely. No, elephant calf, that's not the case at all in the wild. They're extremely hardy, very rugged, and, an elephant, a baby death is very unusual as opposed to being the norm. I can't imagine that Indian elephants are that different. I can only imagine it's captive elephants. I don't know, so I can't comment on it, but the half is just like unheard of, certainly in Africa.
And what sort of mothers do they tend to make? Like with primate apes, they have to be often taught how to breastfeed and to basically suckle their young and be good nurturers. Is that the case with elephants too?
No, not at all. They're instinctual about it. And we had a situation here, which is actually described in the book, about the birth of a baby, baby Tula. And she couldn't stand after she was born because she was a very big baby and her little feet had folded over in the womb and she couldn't stand. And it was the most amazing thing because the herd, of course, comprises a matriarch and it's all the adult females, the aunts and cousins and sisters. No males in the herd except for youngsters. And they stayed with that baby, lifting it with their trunks. They knew exactly what was wrong. I could watch their trunks going onto the little feet. And they would lift her and lift her, and they did that for 2 days. This little baby of ours, for 2 days, in the searing heat, I've got to tell you, the mother and the aunts would place their body between the sun and the baby to keep it in the shade all the time. Not one of the elephants went off for a drink of water. They were absolutely dedicated to getting the baby on its feet.
And they did they?
Well, they didn't, but it does have a different ending. They didn't. Eventually, Nana, the matriarch, led the elephants away. The mother stayed with them, and I saw movement, and I couldn't believe it was still alive. This is now 40 hours later. It hadn't had a drink yet. you know, after being born. And I managed to get in with a pickup, and I had water on the back, and managed to entice the mother to the water, and then slowly drove away. And some of the game rangers managed to get in with another pickup and lift the baby on, and we brought it up to the house and got it onto a drip and kept it alive.
Gosh. And its feet sort of turned around, did they? And it stood on its feet eventually.
Yes, absolutely it did. Yes, it did.
Now, look, I'm just move off elephants in the wild for a moment, because you've been instrumental, and of course it made you very famous, in saving the elephants and animals generally at the Baghdad Zoo during the Iraq War. Could you just summarise, please, for us your most vivid memories of that amazing event?
I will, but I want to just compliment Australia at this moment, because while I was over there, there was an Australian contingent in Baghdad, and I became friendly with a number of the chaps over there, wonderful, wonderful young men, gave me all the possible support I could ever want at the zoo. I was out there, just a wonderful bunch of guys. And I must say, you know, the American army is dry, and in order to repay them for their help, I once found 24 beers in Baghdad, cold beers, which is impossible. The Americans wouldn't take it. The Australians, they didn't last long.
Oh, no, I'll bet.
Great guys.
Anyway, back to the zoo.
I went in. I was very naive. I've got to say that up front. I was very naive. I went in out of a sense of righteous indignation, and the reason was, right back to the Second World War in Germany, thousands and thousands of animals died in zoos when they were bombed. And when the Iraqis invaded Kuwait, same thing. All the animals died, same thing in Afghanistan, same thing in Kosovo. And nobody was going to do anything about the zoo, which was the biggest zoo in the Middle East. And once I was there, couldn't get out because the war was going on, which I thought was over. And, just put together an initiative with some wonderful people to, you know, wonderful civilians army officers to help the animals.
But, I mean, when you got there, it was a bit of a horror story, wasn't it? Many of the 630 animals were starving or had been shot and killed. Like, it was a really awful yes. scene that confronted you, wasn't it?
Hundreds and hundreds died in their cages, died of thirst and hunger, were looted. It was absolutely shocking. We had our backs against the wall because the war was going on. There was no food or water or anything. You know, we didn't have supplies, so we really had to make do. And when you say me, there was I managed to cobble together a team of some of the Iraqi staff. We had South African mercenaries there, American officers. It was amazing, Geraldine. This war was going on around us. I had Republican Guard soldiers who had two, three days before were fighting the Americans in the zoo helping, working with American soldiers. This amazing thing just took over. You know,
the film is going to be made of it, isn't it? That's what I said at the start.
Yes, it is. Hollywood are making a movie about it.
I'll bet they are. Who's going to star as you?
Well, I thought Brad Pitt would be.
I knew you'd say that, or George Clooney. Everyone wants to have George Clooney or Brad Pitt represent them.
No, well, I said to the producers, they asked me why when I said Brad Pitt, and I said I thought a good likeness was important.
Now, look, I've got one more question. To the conservationist, Lawrence Anthony. I really want to know, Lawrence, how did you come to start working with animals like this? Because if I hear you correctly, the core of what you try to do is to help rebuild the relationships at your base between remote African people and the bush and the plant and animal kingdoms. We haven't had a chance to properly talk about that, but that's really the essence of it, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's what we do. In fact, we launched Africa's latest game reserve just last week, a major undertaking with local tribes. And the purpose is to rebuild these traditional and cultural ties that the Zulu tribes have had with nature in the old days, which were denuded by colonialism and apartheid. It was, remember, during apartheid, they weren't even allowed, blacks weren't even allowed into game reserves. So this has been something I've been working on from before the end of apartheid, and we continue with, thankfully, quite successfully.
So they knew even less than the white kids, did they, who went to zoos?
Absolutely. We have major game reserves in this country where people who live just outside the fence have never seen a zebra or a giraffe.
Well, Lawrence Anthony, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I'm deeply envious, actually, of the life you live. So, look, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Geraldine.
And Lawrence Anthony co-authored The Elephant Whisperer, My Life with the Herd in the African Wild with Graham Spence. It's been translated into all sorts of languages. It's a Sidgwick and Jackson publication. His other book, Babylon's Ark, The Incredible Wartime Rescue of the Baghdad Zoo, that's the one that's being made into the Hollywood movie. And his Tula Tula Reserve is in the KwaZulu-Natal province of South Africa.